Brother Wes, what's up?
Man, I got to tell you, you know, we were just talking to our guest today about the power of saying no. And one of the funny things I remember hearing one time was somebody said that, I think it was Alec Baldwin, who, you know, doesn't necessarily have the best rep going right now.
Yeah.
He said that if he had Jerry's money, he would sit on a beach with a phone next to him. And every time it rang, he would just pick it up and say no.
I like it. So that's perfect.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I'm excited to hear what Brad's take on that towards the end, because I love the power of no, because, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and we kind of train ourselves, and we're trained by coaches and trainers and people. We're always looking for that yes, right? We're always looking for that. What can we do? What should we do next? And all that's important. But some of the most important things we can do is figure out what we don't want to do or shouldn't do or just doesn't make sense to do. And sometimes I think it's the real reason for just saying no is because I don't have to and I just don't want to. Right. That's okay. Right. I mean, it's okay. Why don't you want
to
do that?
Have Jerry Seinfeld's money to say no. I mean, I think that, you know, that there's
it power helped.
In saying no. Some things take precedence. I mean, we have families, we got, you know, free time. And if you have time blocked out for certain things and you're just trying to be nice by saying yes, you know, sometimes it's okay to politely say no. I mean, it's fine.
It is. So with that in mind, and an incredible segue that I can't ride, by the way. Why don't I say no to you and I continuing to blabber, and let's go bring on Brad. What do you think?
Brad is much, much more interesting, so let's bring him on.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, Brad. Right.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
The much-awaited Brad Zolas. How you doing, brother?
Hey, man. What's up, Randy? Good to have you on your show.
Well, I'm just excited I got your name right, I think.
Yeah, Zolas.
Zolas. Okay, see, I got it wrong anyway. I just wanted you to correct me. That's all. I wanted you to feel comfortable and being able to push back if need be. So that was set up. That's all right, buddy. So, well, welcome and thank you for being on Building Wins Live. And I'm looking forward to spending 30 minutes or so building some wins with you, man.
Good. I'm excited because, you know, you briefly touched on the subject, and I'm a big fan of self-development. And you know, you change the course of your life by changing what's going on inside. I'm a big fan of that, and I'm a big believer in that.
Yes, it is. And you know, I've thought back to my younger years, which is way back now, Brad. Way back, like the Wayback Machine. And I used to think that you had to wait for somebody, a teacher, a coach, somebody to help me be better, somebody to train me, somebody to teach me. And I think all that stuff's important. I think any of us that don't use that to our advantage, don't matter how far we are in our careers, is a mistake. But the responsibility for all that falls directly on ourselves. Is that not right?
Yes. I always say this to people, you've seen this wave over the past 40 years of two generations being influenced by the work of Carl Rogers, who said that the problems in the world are caused by everybody having low self-esteem. And so we now have a couple of generations that got a 12th place trophy. You know, you showed up, buddy, you did it. Mm-hmm. And I always tell this to people, and I'm someone who has raised three kids, although they are stepkids, I've raised them. You cannot gift someone self-esteem by just using your words and telling them how proud you are and how great they are, or whatever. They must achieve that themselves by doing something that they never thought they could do. And then they create the confidence to be able to stand up and go, okay, I'm going to try the next mountain that I need in life. Right. You may not believe this, you know, I'm a keynote speaker and I have my own podcast, but you and I discussed this before. I was deathly shy as a kid. And if you were at my house, I prefer to, you know, like sit on the couch, watch a little TV, go out, sit in the sun, write. You know, I'm kind of introverted when it comes to these things. But when it comes to my winning personality, and we all have this, what is the personality you've developed to be able to stay self-employed or be able to keep your job? That personality is something you adapted in life for success. And so my winning personality is, my mom had me on stage at 9 years of age playing drums. And I literally was so scared. You would have thought I was at a funeral instead of enjoying the music playing drums, you know. But through the years, I started to realize when there's an audience there, it's my job to bring not only the knowledge, but make them laugh and bring that entertainment and then that humor. But at home, I'm the complete opposite.
Do you think is that an anomaly for Brad, or do you think that's very typical of people that do what you do?
I think it's very typical. I mean, if you look at John Stossel, he was a stutterer as a kid. Darth Vader, you know, the original voice of Darth Vader, James Earl Jones, he was a stutterer. I think we are forced to face the challenge of our shyness. And once we get over it, we're suddenly like, you can't shut us up. You know, we're talking everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I told you in the green room before we started, I was going to tell the story. I was deathly shy as a kid, as I said. Well, my Hungarian father, stepdad, he was the first generation born here in the United States. He decided he was going to have none of that. So it's the summertime. A new kid moved into the neighborhood in our backyard. Their backyard faced our backyard. Mm-hmm. And so my dad says, you're going to stay out here and you're not coming in until you say hello to that new kid. Well, if you ever were in Pennsylvania in the summertime, there's a storm brewing. And I don't mean a little storm. I mean lightning, thunder. It's going to be torrential. I'm sitting on the back stoop and the kid's looking right at me. And we sat there for like 10 minutes. It seemed like an eternity. And I finally said hi. And he said hi. And I ran back inside. And I'm a baby boomer. So I'm from that generation where they would tell you, you go into your room, buddy, and think about what you just did. You know, and there was no TV, there was no video games. You had to sit there and think. And I sat there and I realized the pain of trying to say something to this kid was greater than just saying hello. Mm-hmm. And that broke me of my shyness. It really did. It was one lesson, all done. My dad is brilliant. I look back on that and I say, you know, he really knew how to raise a kid. And from that moment on, you know, I was involved in scouts. I was, doing morning announcements in school. I was always the person they chose to deliver a speech. You know, from that moment on, that shyness just shifted. And it was all about that pain, remembering that pain. Like, why did I sit there and not say hi to this kid? And it was probably more like a half an hour, not 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Why did I sit there in my own self, you know, doubt, whatever, for so long, when it was just easier to say hello? So that was a muscle that got flexed at a very young age.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, Brad, and we hear it in different ways, but usually what you fear and what you worry about, the pain, like you're leading, so you're saying the fear of the fear and what you miss out on, and the worry that you conjure up in your goofy little head is way worse than just whatever it is you just do, right? It really is. We have a way in our mind to make things 10 times worse, 100 times, 1,000 times worse than it really is going to be if we just freaking step up and just, like you said, say, hey, how hard is that, right?
You know, here's something that you may not know about me, because I kind of squelched it a little bit online, but I used to be a professional stand-up comedian. And, this was after I took a company public on Wall Street. I did the opposite because I had so much stress in my life for 7 years, 90-hour work weeks. I decided I needed to have some fun. So I started doing comedy, and I opened for everybody from, you know, Lisa Lampanelli to Tom Rhodes, you know, and I got to meet some pretty big names. And the reason I did it is my entire life, friends had said to me, man, you are so funny. You should be a stand-up comedian. Easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And so I went out and I took a class with, Tim Davis. Big shout out to Tim Davis, comedy coach in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I just learned the craft of comedy. And it wasn't too long before I was getting paid and doing gigs and driving other headliners to events and things like that. And that was probably the second biggest, most fearful time I was ever on a stage to give a speech. I mean, I literally was just, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And I forced myself to get through it because it's not natural to write a speech and then stand up and actually practice it and perform it and get it tighter and tighter and tighter. It can feel literally ridiculous, especially if you're a left brain person who, you know, everything has to be strategic. You know, if you're an accountant, you know, numbers make sense, but standing up and delivering a speech and becoming a master storyteller, that's a whole other discipline, you know, because your brain is literally saying, well, why am I doing this? Hmm. You know, it's the creative part of our mind. It's our right brain stuff.
Right.
And, It definitely gets you out of your head. I'll tell you that if you try. Just all I'm saying is, you know, you don't have to do stand-up comedy, but dare to face your fear, your biggest mm-hmm. fears, the ones that make you sweat and bite your nails and you get nervous about. Just try it.
Because it's probably never, as I said earlier, and we talked about, it's probably never going to be as bad as you've made it out to be before you do it, right?
It's
Now, but I got to imagine, Brad, I have a lot of respect. I love stand-up comedians, and that is something I did not know about you. I love stand-up comedy. I watch the Dry, is it the Dry Comedy House, the Dry Comedy Theater?
Dry Comedy, yeah.
Yeah. I love some of the guys that are on there and gals that are on there, but I have great respect for comedy, but that's got to be like one of the most nerve-wracking, because you work on this joke or these jokes or this storyline, and yeah. The worst thing in the world possible has got to be when you start chuckling over your story that you think is funny as hell, and there's not a person in the room doing anything but staring at you like, what was that, right? That's got to be the worst.
Well, let me share with you one of my earlier gigs. I was about to do a show at the New York Comedy Club, which is over on East 24th Street, I believe it is. It's past Lexington. And so I met up with a couple of friends beforehand to have dinner. And one of my buddies was so nervous for me, he started writing jokes for me. Which, when you have all this stress because you're about to do your own comedy show, and I was the producer of the show as well, I'm just like standing there going, this is not helping. Okay. You know, cause I already have enough pressure to remember what I want to say.
Right.
And so, I got there and he was just, he couldn't believe the people I had on my lineup. You know, I had Tom Shalhoub, and, you know, I used to do shows with Jim Gaffigan when he first started out, before he was actually famous. So I got to hang out with a lot of people who are now very famous today. And if you've ever listened to my podcast, Awakened Nation, any of you've ever listened, that's the reason I have so many comedians on who are now on like the Gutfeld show, or they have their own HBO special. And people are like, how did you get that person? It's like, well, I helped them write some of their first act. You know, I went on the road with them. I got them gigs, you know. Joe DeVito is a good example. I'd drive like 2 hours outside of New York into Jersey somewhere, and I walk in the room and Joe's standing there. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good show. So, they've all become friends through the years. And, you know, I'm not one of these people who sits there and takes advantage of our friendship. You know, I kind of call them up. I say, hey, you want to be on the show? And they almost always leap forward and go, yes, yes, I want to be on the show. So that's been kind of a, you know, icing on the cake in my life.
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So you're an entrepreneur, a comedian, now that we know, a podcaster, a keynote speaker. Talk to me about being authentic, because I'm pretty sure that when and if the day comes, which I'm sure it will somehow, some way, we're going to be in the same area sometime and we're going to meet up for a coffee or a Cabernet or something. And yeah. when we do, I'm going to take a wild guess that the Brad we're seeing here right now is exactly the same Brad I'm going to see when we meet up and bro hug and shake hands. Am I right?
Yeah, that's 100% true. Yeah.
And how important is that?
Well, I think it's incredibly important, but I never thought of it as something that important until my grandfather, you know, kind of pointed it out. I'm like anybody else, you know, when I was a kid, you know, it was all ego. It's all like, you know, I'm awesome, you know, and mm-hmm. that's a facade. That's a lie. Anybody who's arrogant or carrying their ego around like that, I have learned through actually being that jerk in the room, you know, that's compensation. You're compensating for what you lack. And we all do it when we're young. You know, that's when you go for that job interview and you think you should be getting more money than that boomer over there. You know, for those of you younger and listening, that's compensating, you know, because you now have to prove that you can do the job. And a lot of times, you know, I was accused of what we used to call being cocky. You remember that back in the day? but part of my facade came from growing up in a small town, Catholic upbringing, being a drummer on stage, and there was this thing going on in the subconscious and in the way we act, and that is being perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you know, everything has to be perfect, the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you do everything. And I had a biting wit about me, so I was also, pardon me, I don't know if you can swear on the show, but I was a smart ass, okay? That's the worst I'm gonna do.
If that's as far as we go, believe me, we'll be all right.
and all of this facade I had created was protection. You know, it was a protection mechanism, because I couldn't fight. I can now, but I couldn't fight back then. And so we all do this. We compensate. You know, they say there's three major events in our life that form our personality. And the first is when you're a baby. You can't really talk. You can't understand what's going on. But you feel there's something missing between mom and dad. Or your mom is always sad. So you compensate naturally. We do this naturally as children to make mommy happy. Or to fill in that gap of why is mommy and daddy so sad, and we become entertaining or whatever a child does to fill in that gap that they sense and feel from the heart. The second major event in our life that changes us is when we realize we don't fit in. And so we do everything we can to fit in. And this happens usually around late, like in junior high and high school, we begin to look around and realize, oh, we're not with the same clique we grew up with, or we went to elementary school and everybody loved us, you know, and then you get to junior high and they're like, why is your head so big? You know, and you get made fun of and stuff like that. And so we compensate to fit in and be cool, or, you know, we find our tribe basically. Mm-hmm. And then the third event that really shapes our personality is when we realize we're alone in the world. And that usually comes either when you're fired from a job and you realize you have nothing to back up what just happened, or your parents die, you know, something major or traumatic that happens that shakes you at your root, at your core, that makes you realize you're alone in this world and everything's on your shoulders. And so those three events almost always make us compensate and change our personality to be that winning personality. So I'm getting back to being authentic. Authentic is kind of knowing when you're turning on that BS, or maybe it is the authentic you, but when you turn that on in order to win a client or when you do certain things. I don't have that muscle. Okay. When I walk in the room, this is the person you get. Okay. Some people have, I mean, they've said things that make me blush and I say, thank you. I enjoy that. But I learned a long time ago. I'm going to say something kind of funny. My best friend, Dieter Hauer, when we were younger, looked like Christopher Reeves from Superman. Okay. A dead ringer, blue eyes, dark brown hair. The girls, when he entered the room, both girls and women just melted. Well, I'm standing next to him. What do you think I am? I'm the plucky sidekick. I'm the James Spader to, you know, Christopher Reeves here. So I knew from day one, I wasn't good looking enough to just get women, you know, like Andy Garcia could walk into a room and women were like, oh my God, I want to meet him. I'm the plucky sidekick with the good personality. And so I always knew I was in that category. And so I just learned to probably have a better personality than most people. that was my that was my winning personality style. And through the years, I've toned down the ego, you know, as best I can, get rid of it. You know, I've done a lot of spiritual soul searching and things like that. And I realized, you know, the person you see on stage is pretty much the person you're going to have dinner with. I will be blatantly honest with you about my own life. You know, I've been rich. I've been broke. I've been, you know, I've broken my leg on the football field during band camp. If you want to know what's the most humiliating thing you could do. I've screwed up on national television as well. You know, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you about my failures and my wins. And, you know, when people do a Google search of me, I have a lot of great wins. You know, I have a lot of great things that make you sit back and go, damn, I want to have dinner with that guy. But for every one of those wins, I've had four failures, four total screw-ups where I've done something dumb. And I mean dumb, Randy. You know, and we all have. But how much are you willing to admit that and be in the presence of that? Because a business partner taught me this a long time ago. Big shout out to David Settner. He says, don't walk into the room, you know, like with the big ego. He goes, walk into the room leading with your weaknesses. And he said, if you lead with your weaknesses, they automatically see your strengths. And I thought, man, that is deep. That is deep and it's profound. And I think it harkens back to, I know what I know, but I also know what I don't know. And I'm willing to admit what I don't know. And I think that's the most important part about being authentic, is just be yourself. And before we leave and change this topic, there are a lot of you who went to those Gary Vaynerchuk retreats. And you came back and you decided you're going to swear like a truck driver. And you lost clients and you can't figure out why. Well, that's not being authentic. That's copying Gary V.
Right. Okay? Yeah.
And he can get away with that because he took his parents' wine, you know, place from $4 million to $40 million using viral videos. So he knows, he has a track record. So for you, being authentic might mean getting back to the real you. And getting rid of this facade that you've used through the years to climb the corporate ladder. And that's going to be the hardest work you've ever done. Especially if you've been like in the banking industry or you've been an accountant or you've whatever. How do you let your hair down and just be yourself? And if we can, I want to talk about this because I suffered from this for many, many years. And that's called the nice guy syndrome. You ready for that one?
I'm ready. Let's do it. I like
it. If you're a nice guy or a nice gal out there, you're doing everything right except saying no. You're not creating boundaries. You're not creating healthy boundaries. And I'm going to tell you from experience, people will walk all over you. The people that love you in your life, your spouse or whatever, they're going to use you because they like you the way you are. You're a nice person. You might lose your temper when people throw as much crap on you as they can and expect you to get it done. It's about, it's about establishing healthy boundaries for yourself. Because if you're a nice person, people are going to take advantage of you, period. I don't care who you are. And you will shock them when you break out of that, you know, illusion that, you know, you've been walking around in, that you've been projecting to other people. And once they see the authentic you, they may not like you. They may not want to do business with you, but you will attract your tribe. And here's a good example. You know, I was always a nice guy. you know, I crack a joke and whatever. When things got uncomfortable, I could be the funniest guy in the room. Well, my business partners sat me down during the days of K2, and we had a guy who wanted to buy our company, Lock, Stock, and Barrel, and it was a lot of money. And we were so excited. We're like, oh, yeah. But we didn't trust the guy. He kind of was like a sleazy used car salesman, dressed in 1930s style clothing. He had his own apartment with a treadmill inside in Manhattan. He was well known for creating the whole, you remember the Camel Joe, you know, for the Camel cigarettes. They had those little greeting cards. He invented that whole idea. Well, my business partners, we were all about to have dinner with him and his business partner to discuss, you know, mergers and acquisitions. And we started to notice, because we had had several meetings with this dude, he would ignore all of us except for my CEO, David Settner, who was a business partner. And he would sit there and he would just ignore us and tunnel in on Dave, because Dave went to Wharton. Dave was, you know, he was a money guy. We came up with a strategy, and I thought this was brilliant. We would have a wonderful dinner. We'd get nice and relaxed and have a few drinks. And when it was time to discuss business, they wanted me to handle the whole thing because I was the jokey guy. I was the guy who made everybody relaxed and laughing and blah, blah, blah. So the strategy started. We had drinks at the bar. We got ushered to our table. It was a very fine restaurant in New York City, Osso Buco. There at university, we sat down at our table right by the window. We had a wonderful dinner, and you know, this is late afternoon, so the sun hasn't quite gone down yet, and it's winter, it's a little chilly. And all of a sudden, this guy turns and he starts talking business, and he looks right at David. And David sat at the far end of the table, and I had just cracked a joke, so everybody was laughing. This guy thought he was being brilliant by, you know, turning the tables now. And he asked David a question and looked right at him. And I sat right across from him. This is a beautiful strategy. And I looked at him. I said, well, you asked why we didn't do the deal. It's because we don't trust you. And I looked him right in the eye, like steely.
Wow.
And every question he threw at Dave, I gave the answer. This threw him so hard, he didn't know what to do when he left the meeting. And I realized from that moment on that there's a power in just stating what you state and not chuckling at the end, not laughing, just being, boom, here's the information. And I started to really study leadership at that point, business at that point. What was it that really is fundamentally in the power of our own energy, our own presence? As the rapper Mos Def said, my presence speaks volumes before I say a word.
Love
and
that.
The more I got comfortable in myself, the more I got comfortable embracing those parts of myself that I feared. And some of you are listening, you hate a personality trait of one of your parents. Like my dad was always angry, or at least he appeared to be angry. So I avoided anger. I avoided seriousness. I avoided standing there and telling a person off when they had done me wrong. And I began to embrace that part of my dad that I avoided. I began to embrace that part of my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mother, who were super personable with people, who could feel that the person at the next table was lonely and would say, come join us and have dinner with my family. Those tiny little traits that we reject, that we're in our parents, is what will make us stronger. It is what will make us more authentic, and it will make us stand not only in our own power, but attract the right business people, attract the right love of our life, attract the right individuals. And yes, it's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, because you're going to shift into your authentic self instead of avoiding your authentic self.
That's well said. And, you know, I'm not near as smart as you, I can tell.
I've been banging my head against the wall for years to get smart.
But funny thing. Now I'm going to come back to this, but you know, we have one thing in common too. You was a drummer on stage. I was a horn player.
Yeah.
Sixth grade, elementary school, and I was sixth chair out of five. Think about that. Sixth chair out of five. My music teacher said, we had this little concert, right, in this little multi-purpose room, we called it, which was the cafeteria / gym / stage / everything else, right? She said, Randy, we're going to do the concert, and I'm going to let you sit here with the group. But she said, put your horn up, the clarinet up to your mouth, run your fingers up and down, but don't blow in the horn. And I'm thinking, good made sense at the time. Years later, Brad, I'm thinking to myself, as I think back still to the sound, if you can imagine, the first ever little concert of a sixth grade band, it wouldn't have mattered whether I blew in the horn or not. We sucked, right? I mean, nobody would have noticed. But we do have that in common. That was my first experience with really, really, really sucking at something. But I love what you've just talked about, because I think too many times we hide, and one of the things I wanted to key back in on for a second, we hide our weaknesses, and we always want to lead with our strengths. We always want to just be that strong, powerful, all-knowing. Yeah. And in the world of sales, right, one of the things we fall in trap, I think all salespeople do it, unless you become good, yeah, is we fall into this commission breath. We fall into this idea that you want to hear this brilliance that I have to tell you all about the dog and pony show that I have and all the specs and all the crap that I've learned over 40 years of doing this. And yeah, never do I do now, because I've become pretty good at what I do. Right. What I learned a long time ago has nothing to do with me, nothing to do with what I want to tell you, nothing with where I want to go with this, other than the ultimate I would like to get a sale if it makes sense for you and I to do business together, right? Right. It all has to do with you. And so back to a long way of getting back to this is, a lot of times we all have weaknesses in our sale, in our company. We're not perfect. There is no perfect right. manufacturer product. I like to lead reasonably early with an area that I know you probably already know, or my competitor has pointed out is a weakness that I have. And let's just get that out of the way right off the get-go. So then we can walk into the things that we do that are very, very done well. Because isn't the last place we want now we're going kind of a sales talk, but the last thing we want after this hour and a half of brilliant demo is to get to, well, yeah, Randy, but you guys really suck when it comes to this. That's a bad place to have that at the end, right?
Yeah. I look at it this way. Let other people tell your story. You know, sure, you can interject when, you know, they get it wrong. I'm going to throw this out to your audience. During the dot-com boom, which is when I created K2, we were competing against some really aggressive, much smarter, you know, companies, small companies like Razorfish. And we basically, you know, we didn't have an advertising background. We had a design background. And so we discovered this by accident. Me and my business partners, when I say we, Douglas Cleek, Dave Settner, and Matt DeGannon, we discovered this by accident. We went in and we're sitting, I think it was, forget the company, but all I know is on one side of the room were the tech guys, and on the other side of the room were the marketing people. And they were fighting internally at this time because, you know, nobody understood what the internet really was. It was so nascent at that moment. So the marketing people were fighting with the tech people because the tech people were like, well, we're the internet. And the marketing people were like, well, the purpose of the website is marketing. You know, so
right.
You could walk into a room and it would be palpable that, you know, their animosity towards each other. So we would walk in, and one day they were in a hurry. So they said, if you could just do your presentation real quick, that'd be great. So I think we spent 5 minutes talking about the work we did. And we did everything from, you know, we worked with AOL. We did American Express's websites. all our websites were $250,000 and up. And so we're sitting there and we rushed the presentation, which we hadn't planned on doing. And then the rest of the meeting, all we did was ask questions, questions after questions. And we started to interact. And we had our tech guys there and designers and me and all this. And so the tech guys were throwing out these like softballs that if you didn't understand, you know, internet development at that time, website development, they could easily catch that you didn't know what you were doing. And we were just, we were lobbing these babies, you know, one after another. Then they'd ask about design, you know, and we'd talk about how the JPEGs would load in and how it would upload to the site, you know. And we left that presentation, and I think we got a phone call 2 days later, and they said, your presentation was the best. And we were like, wait, what? Out of seven people you interviewed, ours was the best? We hardly presented. And so we started to do that. We just simply would walk in, assume they already knew about us because we had sent them our kit. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a press kit with our designs and everything in it and an investor relations package. And we would just start asking questions. You know, we basically go, look, you can look into our work. You can double check what we've done. We built this and we gave a list of the clients. He goes, you call them. We want to get down to what do you really have as a goal for this? And what size is this going to be, the scope of the project? And what's your timeline? And so we would start just asking questions. And from that moment on, we would win every single RFP, request for proposal, boom, one after another, one after another, one after another. We'd get into these meetings and boom. And it was simply, we didn't talk about us. Right. You know, this is the Dale Carnegie School of Thought right. We're talking about right now. We asked them to talk about them.
Exactly.
And it worked. I could not believe it. I mean, I swear my whole life went topsy-turvy, turned upside down when it comes to sales. When I started to realize it wasn't about me, it was about I'm going to solve their problem, but they got to tell me what the problem is. And that was the number one most powerful thing I learned in business.
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So you've been kind with your time, and I do want to touch on one thing if you got another couple of minutes, Brad, is you know, developing your own personal brand. Let's talk about that because I know it gets talked about sometimes. I think a lot of people don't know what that really means. I mean, I represent ABC company here, and that's kind of what I do. Let's kind of finalize this incredibly great chat, which I really appreciated, with the importance of what's that mean. And how do we do it?
Well, like I said before, you know, you're talking about Gary Vee and people would suddenly come back and start swearing. You know, people never swore before, now using the F-bomb all the time at meetings and things like that. And I say, just stop. Yeah. Just stop. To create a great and effective personal brand, you really have to sit down and ask yourself, and maybe ask friends how they see you, what are you really known for? So for me, I believe I'm a good storyteller. You know, I can always improve. I never think I'm a master, even though I might say I'm a master storyteller in my LinkedIn bio. I am somebody who always works on the craft. You know, I always try to get better, stage presence, things like that, because the end goal for me was to, you know, I'd write a book about my experiences and then be a keynote speaker. So I started to realize my superpower, Randy, was I have a great sense of humor. And second, I can also explain very complex issues and make people laugh about it, which makes you remember and learn, want to lean in when you try to learn. And I realized those were the things that I could bring to the table. My personality, I also do impersonations. So I used to shy away from doing all of this, but these are the rich milieu that the secret sauce that is Brad Zolas. So I want everybody to write down, what are your secrets? What are your killer things that you do better than everybody else? Maybe you're an incredible golfer. Maybe you're a chemist who's incredibly creative. Maybe you're a gym coach who has some ideas and theories about training or eating better. What's your winning personality? Can you do that on video? can you do a podcast about this? So as I started to figure out, and by the way, this will always be evolving. You know, Brian Tracy said, the jokes I used to tell when I was in my 40s did not work when I was in my 60s because they fit your age category. Right. And, you know, as somebody who's in his 60s myself, I do realize there are certain things I can no longer tell on stage because they don't fit my age now. You know, I have somebody I wanted to interview, but I gave it to another interviewer because they were matched in age better. And that person was talking about Vietnam. And I thought, that would be a better interview if that guy did it. So you have to really start being aware of your presence, your abilities, what you bring to the table. Are you a sharp business person? If you're not, maybe you shouldn't be talking about business. If you are like me, I'm moving things now into more creative realms. I can talk about creativity all day long. And I started this journey with K2. I had to speak at our stockholders meetings. And so I had to get up and start talking. And when you're dealing with numbers, you have to be serious about what you're doing. But then I had friends asking me to do keynotes after I wrote my first book, Liquid Leadership. And what I did in that book is I was concerned about boomers really understanding, my own baby boomer brethren, about understanding that there was a new generation that came along that didn't have the same needs, wants, and expectations. That was number one. Number two, technology would lower the barrier of entry for anybody who wanted to start a business. So I put together, you know, the basically the seven principles of a liquid leadership, a liquid leader. And I just wrote about my own personal experiences. Well, that led to me becoming a keynote speaker. And one of the very first keynotes I did, they had me do the opening keynote. And I wanted to give across the information where at the same time be in my own personality. And I saw that visuals helped immensely when I was doing this. Because I have pretty good stories, you know, that get people to go, oh, okay. But one of the most powerful things I learned, I took everything I had learned in stand-up comedy, and I know I'm going the long route around this story, but I want everybody to realize every single discipline, every single experience, everything you've done in life will lead to you doing what you're doing today. And so for me, when I bowed out of stand-up comedy after 8 years of being on the road, guess what? When I went to be a keynote speaker, I would jump into the crowd and start doing what we call crowd work. But I had stories to go with it, and I had different things that went with it. And in the beginning, you're going to bomb. I bombed at one of my first gigs badly. And I worked very hard to reach people in the audience. And what happened is, and for those of you who are listening but not watching, I have visual aids. I learned that people would sit in the back of the room and they'd have their arms crossed and they go, this generation should have been paddled. You know, they would yell stuff like that. Well, I said, how can I get across to people visually to shut down the argument and just listen to what has changed? And the first thing I did is I would pull out a GAF ViewMaster. We all grew up with these.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
It is self-contained slideshow. It's the most interactive thing a baby boomer could do.
Yep.
And if the sun went down, the power went out, you couldn't use it.
Right.
And so we now have a new generation that was raised with this, and I'm holding up a Nintendo 64 controller. And then I stand there on stage and I go, do you think our brains might be working differently from one generation to the next? That shut down every argument. And so in my obsession with becoming a good keynote speaker, in that obsession, I found my voice, my authentic voice that I could use to make people laugh. I would use the stories of my father, you know, making me carry bricks, several tons of bricks, one at a time when I'm 10 years old, to the back porch. Is so funny. You know, when I tell it, I've had executives in the oil and gas company laughing so hard they're crying. And that's when I realized I was on to something. Being me, truly being me, like I am when I go out with my friends and we have a couple of drinks and we laugh and we cry together. And I tell them great stories, but I also tell them the sad stuff, the pain I'm going through. When you can do that, the same person on stage is the same person off stage, then you're becoming more of who you really are. And don't be afraid to peel back those layers. You may think that some of your stories are just, I can't tell that. No, there's somebody in that audience that needs to hear that story. And lastly, I have to say this. I don't know how our time is, but I wanted to really give this to your audience. And that is this. I learned this from Linda Swindling. She's a lawyer and she's a negotiator, but she has been on my podcast, Awakened Nation. And she teaches a class basically on how to ask outrageously, and specifically for women. Now, men can do this too, but for women, she learned the hard way. She wasn't asking bold enough. She wasn't getting to the meat quickly. And what happened is she went to see Jay Leno, and before the show starts, he comes out and he does a bunch of stuff, and she raised her hand and she asked a question. She thought, I'll ask this question and then I'm going to ask to get a picture with him. And she asked the question, Jay answered it, saying, well, you know, you got to do this. You know, he starts going into it. And then he moved on and she's like, and he could see the disappointment in her face. The next woman says, can I get a picture with you? She gets up on stage, gets the picture. Jay looks back at her and he goes, you wanted to ask this, didn't you? You know, and she's like, yeah. And he goes, well, she asked, you know. And so
that's funny.
She realized I should have opened with what I wanted. I should have asked boldly. I should have not thought, well, that's not proper. And I need to be a good girl. You know, that goes back to good guy, good girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I learned from her, big shout out to her, Linda, to just ask outrageously. Don't be afraid to ask outrageously. It's the reason why I've gotten guests on my show like Dog the Bounty Hunter, or Stephen M. R. Covey, or Dan Millman, or Panache Desai. I've gotten big name people on my show, and I'm this little guy doing it from the studio in my house. You know, hey, how you doing? That's it.
Yep.
You have to be willing to be bold. Set aside your mind. Your mind is going to lie to you. Your mind is going to tell you you're not worthy. You're not good enough. You're not this. Just take that mind and treat it like your negative stepbrother. Just push it out of the way.
Love it.
And say, I'm going to go for this. And what's the worst that can happen? They say no.
They say no. Or they ignore you altogether, one or the other, right? Big deal.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, that's the old nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
What's the
worst case? You know, that I love that story because with our little podcast here, one of the first bigger name guests, if you will, we've had brilliant, great guests and been blessed. And I keep getting more really, really good guests because of that exact same thing. And I remember our mutual friend, Ben Gay III, right? I mean, this is like Mickey Mantle in the sales world, right? I read his stuff from the beginning of time, right? So we kind of communicated via, you know, liked something he posted, he liked something I posted. And I thought, I'd like to have him on the show. But the first thought was, why would he come on my show?
Yeah.
Why? But you know what? Yeah. Like you just said, what was the worst case? Hey, Ben, love what you do. I've read your books. I'd love to have you come on my podcast. And you know what? 28 seconds later, I'd be honored to.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. Simple as that.
And that's Ben.
And that's Ben.
That's so Ben.
Yes. Yep. And there's so many people out there that, like you said, just, I like that, outrageously ask, right? Just, hey, I'm boldly asked, not outrageously, but boldly ask, hey, you know, hey, kind of a Star Trek theory.
That is awesome. That is great.
Yeah. That was back in West Sacramento or Old Sacramento back about a little over a year ago. Wes and I spent some time in Carson and with his lovely wife, Gigi, we spent 2.5 days of just great time. Oh, there we are.
That is so great.
Yes. I always tell Ben he outkicked his coverage with Gigi, that's for sure. But, and he'll agree.
He is such a great person. And
isn't he?
The fact that he has worked with Zig Ziglar and, you know, Napoleon Hill and all these, it's phenomenal. I want you to understand something. You know, I'm dating myself when I say folks, but I want you to understand something incredibly powerful. I flew out to a big summit where I was a keynote speaker on one of the days, or a guest speaker. And another person I admired, I wanted to meet, he was a guest speaker on the next day. And so I did my thing on the first day, and I get off stage. And this was the event that I met Ben, officially met Ben at. And the guest speaker the next day was Joel Kamm. And Joel, you know, has done TED Talks. He started out telling you how to use Twitter when it first came out. All this guy's famous, and he's quite rich doing keynote speeches. So the next day after he gets off stage, I watch what he did. He makes it look so easy. And I went up to him, and I waited till everybody, you know, he signed books and everything. And I waited in the background, and I went up to him, and I said, "Hey, Joel, I'm Brad. I was one of the speakers the day before, and I just want to say I love your work." And he looked at me and he goes, Brad, oh my God, I love what you do. And he grabs me, and I'm like, he's watching my work. And yeah, I was just, and back then I was doing all this generational stuff, and I was just like, this guy who you know, I assumed didn't know me from Adam, turns out he's been watching me. And you never know, folks. The person you admire the most, and if you're putting yourself out there, you're taking a risk, you're taking a chance, you're doing videos, you're doing a podcast, whatever it is you're doing, someone's watching you, and they're admiring what you're doing. So don't hold back.
That's it. Hold back. Love it. Great advice. Well, Brad, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you being on, my friend.
Thank you.
Always kind of like to end with the ever popular should ask questions. So there's got to be something in your life of travels out there that you just go, I talked to all these people and nobody ever asked me this. I wish they'd ask me more about this. Let's finish out with the should ask question with Brad.
Huh. That's a tough one. Well, one is, I've done so many things in my career. One of them is I've done voiceovers as well. Hmm. You know, so that has been an interesting road as well, going public. I guess, what is the number one question? I guess it really boils down to what really drives me. And I can only say this from a great story from my ex-wife. And we're still good friends to this day, but she said something to me one day, Randy, that kind of blew my mind. We were about to do something. We always had projects, and I'm up and I'm writing down how we're going to approach this. And, you know, I think it was in real estate. We were doing something and I'm really jumping in, and she just stands there and looks at me. And I said, "What?" She goes, "You don't do anything at 50%, do you?" I said, "No." I said, "I do everything at 100%. Once I make up my mind, it's at 100%. I said, "My dad taught me that." And I think that is a testament to my father, a testament to my grandfather. You know, my grandfather is a fifth generation or a fourth generation drummer in my family. He played with the big bands. And when he was probably in his 20s, he was trying to, you know, make money on the side from his day job playing drums late at night to pay for these two kids he had. And to this day, you know, before he died, he would run into somebody once a week that he had played with, you know, in an orchestra or band somewhere. Because in the 1930s and 40s, if you were a musician, you were working in probably not the greatest situations. Most of the people playing were poor. They were trying to make that extra dollar. Being away from their family late at night. And a lot of times they weren't white guys either. My grandfather had a lot of rich, wonderful friendships with people that, in a day and age when a lot of people didn't cross that racial line, my grandfather had tons of friends who were from all kinds of backgrounds, and he would run into them in the middle of nowhere. We'd be in New York City and he'd run into somebody. I mean, this was astronomical to me. And I feel, you know, getting back to being authentic and being whatever, I think it boils down to one thing, Randy. You have to love people, man. You have to love other people and what they're about. You know, if I can say there's one thing that it separates me from everybody else, I'm truly interested in other people's culture, your food, your dance moves, your the music of your culture. And it's why I've been able to sit down and break bread with people from Africa, Puerto Rico, South America, every place in the world. I can tell you I've met and tried the food. I've listened to the music. And I guess that's my unique selling proposition.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, if you were to go to marketing terms, I'm truly interested in other people. And I think that shows up in my show. And in my life and in the way I talk to people.
Love it. And I think that is your, that right there more than anything else is your personal brand. That is the brand of Brad right there. And I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Love it.
I've never thought of that. Thanks.
Hey, you're welcome.
Pulling that out of me.
I'll send you a bill. Anyway, I take Venmo. So, but anyways, thank you so much for being on today. I appreciate it. Appreciate the great conversation and the time hey, I just, maybe we'll do it again someday. It was a good time.
Absolutely. And I'm going to have you on my show as well. Love to have
I'd
you.
Love on. It. Honored. Be honored. Well, all right, my friend.
A great combo.
You got it. All right. Thanks, my friend, so much. Cheers.
Have a all good right. one.
You bet. Bye. You as well. All right. Man, was that some good stuff with Brad or what? I loved so much about that, but if you didn't get anything, get the be authentic, be you, step out, be bold, and ask, right? Just ask the question, because you're either going to get no response or you're going to get yes, or you might get no, but you know, further behind than you were if you didn't ask. So great conversation with Brad. Really, really, really great guy. Check out his book, check out his show, check out everything he does. If he ever does some stand up in your community again, I think he'd be a very funny guy. Anyways, that's it for today. Remember, live it, love it, own it. And what I'm doing right now, and if nothing, I say this many a time, but if you don't take anything else from what I talk about, write about, speak about, whatever the case may be, love what you do and do what you love. And that's exactly what we're doing right here today. And while you're at it, go make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.